Welcome to Fit and Chips Chats. This is a podcast for women over 40 who are looking for sane and frank advice about their health and wellness, especially through menopause. I'm Amanda Thebe, the original resilient bitch and menopause guru. In my work as a personal trainer and nutrition coach, and through my own personal experience, it became obvious to me information about menopause and this curious phase of our life was so ridiculously hard to find. And that's why I started this podcast. Join me every week as I speak to health and wellness experts on hot topics that directly impact you. I've made it my mission to help you by exploding a few myths, presenting you with the facts, and hoping to inspire you to be a healthy, strong person just like me. If you like this show, please subscribe and leave a review. Then go and tell your friends, and then go and tell your husband, and then tell the neighbor, and then don't forget to visit me at fitandchips.com. And now let's get started on today's show. Hi, everybody. Welcome back to this week's episode of Fit and Chips Chats. This week on the show, I have Jane Simpson. Jane has had her own private practice for 22 years. She is a pelvic floor expert. She treats patients with all forms of incontinence and pelvic floor dysfunction. She's a member of the Pelvic Floor Society. Who knew that existed? This is the first time I found out about that. The Association for Continence Advice and the International Continence Society. And we're going to talk about her first book. She's hoping to spread the word about the pelvic floor. The book is called The Pelvic Floor Bible, Everything You Need to Know to Prevent and Cure Problems at Every Stage of Your Life. Welcome to the show, Jen.
Hello, Amanda. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine, loud and clear. So it's great. It's great to have you on the show. So let's get started. So you say in your book there are an estimated 200 million people around the world that suffer from some form of urinary incontinence. And is that of that number? Do you think that more women than men suffer from incontinence?
Yes, absolutely. At least twice as many, mainly because women have babies. And we also suffer the menopause, which causes vaginal atrophy and all sorts of things which can make problems worse. Men in general don't have pelvic floor dysfunction until they have some form of prostate issue, possibly having prostate surgery. So there's much less chance, as men aren't having babies, that they are going to suffer with pelvic floor dysfunction. It's very much more common in women, and it's a very, very underreported and a terribly taboo subject still, which is why I've written my book in a hope that we make this a normal mainstream thing, like going to the gym, doing yoga, doing Pilates, keeping fit. Pelvic floor exercises and strengthening muscles should be the same.
So, you know, you were just saying that it's very embarrassing and very taboo. And I also think that there's this perception, and so I think even I had that perception maybe 5 years ago before I went through menopause completely, that incontinence issues happen to old people. You know, we see the incontinence pants that depends on the shelves, and we just associate those with somebody other than ourselves, when I've realized that's far from true, right? And I've struggled with incontinence myself. And then, and this is after having children 15 years prior, I never expected it to happen to me. And I was absolutely devastated by it. So why do you think that we have this perception of incontinence only being about old people? What is it about, like, the way that we talk about the whole incontinence problem?
I think that we just haven't talked about it. I think that there is a thought that our pelvic floor muscles are our pelvic floor. You can't see it. It's sort of hidden away down there. I think that we are struggling with the rigors of everyday life, which makes it very hard to get round to doing something about it. I'm sure a lot of you have got a little something, a little thing in a box that you bought a few years ago and you've used once or twice, or not at all, or a leaflet on your pelvic floor exercises. And I think the intention is there in us to do our pelvic floor exercises, but I'm not sure what's stopping us. We just need to make pelvic floor dysfunction, which is such a common condition, talked about and part of our daily life. I just don't get why strong and well-functioning pelvic floor muscles, which should be really important to us, just like everything else, have always been sort of a bit taboo. And I think it's probably that we just think, well, I've had a baby, so what do I expect? This is normal. But it isn't normal, and it's very curable.
Which is great to hear. And that's what the one thing I want women to, as mainly women, listen to the show, that things like this can be preventable and curable. And so let's talk about the pelvic floor itself, and let's talk about the type of issues that people might, women might struggle with their pelvic floor, because it's not such a straightforward subject topic. And I know from myself, from the fitness industry and the anatomy and physiology side, that the pelvic floor doesn't work in isolation. It works together with other parts of the internal core system. And so can we just talk about the type of things that you see and the type of dysfunctions that you see?
Absolutely. And I suppose the commonest thing is stress incontinence, when you sneeze or cough or laugh or jump. And certainly, I think most menopausal women would be slightly terrified of the trampoline or the skipping rope. But I think that that's possibly the most common thing. And it's something that women will say, well, oh, well, it only happens, you know, if I do a big sneeze with a full bladder. So that's okay, isn't it? And it jolly well isn't okay. I think the second possibly most common thing is overactive bladder. So it's the standing on your doorstep, absolutely desperate, legs crossed, trying to get the key in the door, racing to the toilet before disaster strikes, trying to get your knickers down before you've wet yourself. And again, people are sort of putting up with that as though that's, well, you know, it happens occasionally. But actually, it happens to a lot of people when they literally see their front door, or they're at the bottom of the street and they can see their front door and they're thinking, oh my God, will I ever make it to the house?
Yeah, we can't. I've heard that talked about here as the urinary urge incontinence. I don't know if it's
that's right
in the UK. Okay, right, but that's
so urge incontinence or the overactive bladder. They are one and the same little horror, and definitely I think happen possibly a little bit more when you get towards menopause, as you start to have less estrogen in the vagina and the tissues are thinning, and you get this urgency problem slightly more. And the next sort of thing on my list has to be prolapse. I think vaginal prolapse is massive, and at least 50% of us who've had kids probably got a degree of vaginal prolapse. If it's first degree, you probably don't even know it's there. But putting extra strains on the pelvic floor when you have a little bit of prolapse could turn a first degree prolapse into a second or a third degree one, where you are then in trouble. But again, very lots of things you can do about it that don't involve surgery. And I think people maybe are afraid. They think they've got a prolapse, it's an operation. And there are now lots of things out there, like vaginal pessaries, which can be used. I had a patient actually who walked Hadrian's Wall with a vaginal pessary. She had quite a significant prolapse. So it's about empowering women to be able to help themselves with various bits of equipment. I mean, obviously the ultimate goal is that your pelvic floor gets so strong that you don't need bits of equipment. But if you do, you should be able to know about them so you don't have to suffer in silence anymore.
I know that when I had incontinence through perimenopause, and I didn't have it after my children.
Mm-hmm.
Years later, I had it through perimenopause. I felt like I was educated enough in the system of how the pelvic floor works in conjunction with everything. I didn't have diastasis rectus. I didn't have lower back issues. My diaphragm was working fine. You know, everything was working fine, but something was stopping me. I actually had stress incontinence, and I remember going for a run in the hills of Scotland. I was home, and I was visiting my husband's parents, and I was running down the hill, and I looked down and I drenched myself, and I didn't even know it had happened. I was absolutely horrified, and I couldn't work out why it had happened. I ended up, at the time I was living in Toronto, and when I went back, I went to see a pelvic health physiotherapist, and the only way I could actually identify what the problem was because I had something tangible, like an internal exam. And for me,
yes.
It was actually I was hypertonic in my sphincter, like my glutes were too tight. And so I couldn't actually activate my pelvic floor properly. It was interesting. And I know that if I'd have done traditional Kegels, I would have created more tension and instead of actually trying to release through the areas that were causing me problems. And so I am like a huge fan of pelvic health physiotherapists. I think every woman should just get one free in the post. I think everyone
yeah, I think so.
Have access to that. But so that I think was going to be like my next type of question. Like, is there like a there isn't a one size fits all in like from the stories I've heard women, you know, give me, but like, is there something that every woman should be doing that would help them? Doesn't matter what their issues are, or is it literally down to each individual?
It's a good question. And that in my practice is what I do, which is to tailor what I do for each individual. But sadly, I think there's so many women with pelvic floor dysfunction that they can't all see someone or don't all want to. They maybe want to make their own way. And I think that I'm a very big fan of tools and gadgets to do with the pelvic floor. So easy things are, there's an app called Squeezy, so that can help you do your Kegel exercises. The problem with that is, are you doing it right?
Yeah.
And that is a big, big issue for me. Are you using the right muscles? I've tried in my book to give really good hints about things that, you know, you can do. Like, for example, put a tampon in your vagina and try and pull it out and see if you can, you know, do a tug of war. Maybe try to put your finger in your vagina and squeeze it and see if you can feel the pelvic floor lifting.
Yeah.
Simple things like that. But otherwise, there are lots of things that are out there on the market. I mean, the most expensive one is the LB Trainer, which has a great biofeedback. You use it with your mobile phone, and you have an app that when you contract, you put the LV in you. When you contract, you follow a 5-minute program. And I think that's the modern woman is fantastic. 5 minutes, you follow the program. You don't have to plan anything. You just do what it tells you, and then it tells you how you're doing over time. And I think we all like biofeedback. We're all with our Fitbit and, you know, things like that. That's what the modern world is like. It's not like the days of Arnold Kegel, where he gave everyone something called a perineometer. And you inserted the probe into your vagina, and it had a dial which looked a bit like a car speedometer. And he got his ladies. So remember, we're now in the 1950s. And he got his ladies to use it for 20 minutes, 3 times a day. Now, if we think of the modern woman, I'm not sure that we've all got 20 minutes, 3 times a day to insert the perineometer and contract our pelvic floor muscles. But if we have something that's doable, that's the important thing. It's doable. Are you using the right muscles? And are you doing it often enough? And if you can get those three things right, you will improve your pelvic floor. So vaginal weights, for example, that's a great bit of kit that's really easy to use. It's not expensive, and it's vaginal weightlifting. You can do it in the shower in the morning and off you go. Then you don't need to think about your muscles again for the rest of the day. And if your muscles are really, really, really poor, then electrical stimulation is the way to go. And, you know, I have lots of patients who, when I examine them, can't make any pelvic floor effort at all. And there's no point whatsoever, like you say, telling them to do their pelvic floor exercises or their Kegels, because they can't. And so if you use a vaginal electrode and stimulate the muscles, I mean, obviously some women can't do this, but the majority of women could if required. So if when you put your finger in your vagina and try to squeeze it, you can't feel anything whatsoever, maybe electrical stimulation is the way forward. And I think at that point, probably a trip to the women's health physiotherapist or the continence specialist like me would be the way forward, because you just need probably a bit more guidance.
Saying the things that women can do on
absolutely
their own before, because I'm here in the United States, and actually having access to a pelvic health physiotherapist isn't within everybody's reach purely because of insurance purposes. We have direct access in a lot of states that allows us to go directly to a physiotherapist without a referral from a doctor. But then if the insurance doesn't cover them, it can be quite challenging. And so I know a lot of women are like really struggling to find the right thing to do for them. And for me, historically, I've lived through the age of like badly instructed Kegels that, you know, we went through a phase of telling women to overly clench our pelvic floor. That was particularly in the United States. And then also my other question was, with the vaginal weights, do you think that, are they appropriate for everybody? Is that the type of thing that everybody should use? Because I have heard conflicting, you know, advice from those, like, for example, in my situation where I was hypertonic, where I had too much tension, I was told that vaginal weights would actually be the worst thing for me. I actually needed to learn how to relax again.
if that's the situation, of course. Yeah. And really, vaginal weights are good for someone whose pelvic floor is a little bit weak. Obviously they won't work if you have a prolapse, particularly a uterine prolapse, because they're just then pushed out.
Pressure.
But I think what I'm trying to say is that everything has a place. Okay. And, you know, there are little bits of kit out there that aren't, you know, going to break the bank that would be helpful to some women. So at least we are now, we do have choice. The problem is, you know, have you got the right thing for you? But at least if you're doing something, that's better than nothing.
I have to say that, like, when I know when I was given exercises to do, and I'm an exercise professional, it's what I do for my living, it literally would be the last thing I wanted to do. Because I think the problem with pelvic floor exercises is they're boring. And they require you to, you know, actually like focus on something that's very intrinsic and internal. And it's not like doing a deadlift or doing some squats where you get gratification. It feels very like, it almost feels like you're not doing anything. I understand it clearly is, which is, I think, probably why the biofeedback tool does work, because you're actually getting results. And I think we're a results driven community, aren't we, in general?
We are.
We all want to win.
That's right. And actually, I had two ladies who were doing that, the biofeedback thing. And they were great friends. And I mean, I didn't know that, you know, either of them knew each other, and they'd met for coffee and they'd confided in each other that they'd been to see me. Then they started competing with each other. And whoever had the strongest muscles with their biofeedback had to buy lunch for the other one.
They were
such cool girls. And they were both, you know, like my age, and they were, you know, but in fact, I think they both had three children. They were like 50 something. They were both fit. They, you know, but they both had stress incontinence, and it was hysterical. They had this competition.
Can you?
And it was great.
Way to come up with the final check, and she goes, "Oh, I'm getting this because my vagina is stronger than hers."
Yeah, it was true. I mean, it's as true as I'm telling you. It was one of my best stories. And, you know, if we could all be a bit more like that, obviously we don't want a sort of world of women competing with each other on London Underground, but I think we just need to sort of embrace it somehow. And it's weird that we don't, I mean, we were never ever going to leave the house without cleaning our teeth. So why would you not do your pelvic floor exercises if you've got stress incontinence or you can't make it to the front door before you're wetting yourself? I mean, it's quite weird that we'll put up with that when it's so easily fixed. And I think if we associate it to our teeth cleaning, and every time you're cleaning your teeth, you're doing your pelvic floor exercises, we would have a world of stronger pelvic floor muscles.
Yeah, and I think that you've hit the nail on the head. Like, why do we put up with it, right? And I was saying to you before we started recording that, you know, I often get asked to like promote products and etc., and it's just not something I enjoy doing. But the amount, easily every week I get 3 or 4 emails from people selling products for incontinence. And maybe it comes from a place that, you know, to support women as they're going through their treatment. But for me, I don't want to be seen to be promoting this, because I want women to feel empowered to actually go and get help and find a way to sort of like cure what is happening to them, not just to put up with it by having to think, oh, well, today I'll just wear Depends. There has to be something more for women to look forward to than the idea of spending the second half of their life literally in diapers. It's
well, exactly. Yeah. And we're going to spend a third of our life in the menopause. Yeah. I mean, you know, if you actually look in a supermarket trolley of older women, you know, quite often they've got sanitary towels in there. Why? Mm-hmm. They're not having periods. They're using them for incontinence because they're too shy to buying, you know, incontinence pads. And I really think that we have to move away from that, oh, well, just wear a panty liner, to go, well, why am I wearing a panty liner? Why aren't I fixing this problem? Because it is easily fixed. And I think certainly at the menopause, vaginal estrogen is one of my big things. I really do feel that we are lacking in vaginal estrogen, and nobody is, or not enough women are being treated for that problem.
So let's talk.
I examine women every day. Sorry.
Yeah, let's talk about menopause. Let's talk about what happens in menopause. It would be really good if you could like give an explanation of, like, you know, I have talked about this before on the show, but it's just really good for women to sort of be reminded that some things are going to be out of their control. So can you tell us what happens through perimenopause, leading up to menopause, as far as
as far as I'm concerned, I mean, obviously we all know the dreaded hot flushes, night sweats and all the rest of it, but vaginal atrophy can creep up upon us. And interestingly, I think women who aren't having hormone replacement therapy, and as we know, that's only 10% of women still are using HRT, which is a shame that that again is another area of great taboo. And Louise Newsom is a big advocate of trying to make people more aware of the real, you know, benefits of it. But I examine women every single day, and particularly women who haven't had a vaginal delivery, maybe had 2 cesarean sections. And I look at them and I see this vaginal atrophy, and I say to them, you know, when was the last time you had intercourse? And they will say to me, oh, dear, no, I've stopped. It's too painful. I haven't done it for 2 years. My husband, you know, he doesn't really mind. Well, you know. And I say, well, do you want to have intercourse? And they're like, well, yeah, I'd like to, but, you know, it's so painful. I'm never doing that again. And I said, well, how about using some vaginal estrogen maybe? And, you know, with some vaginal estrogen, some good pelvic floor rehabilitation, I honestly have restored lots of women's sex lives. And that is a great joy to me, to think that, you know, we've just given up on our sex lives because our vaginas are atrophied. I mean, that's just shocking.
And it hurts and it's painful and it can cause, you know, other problems. And I think, I think that, what we know in perimenopause is the estrogen starts to decline. It's the integrity of the muscle, right, that breaks down. There's a sense of atrophy to the skeletal muscle that happens, right? But what I wanted to sort of like talk about is that, like, the bladder itself doesn't go through like the atrophy. As far as I understand, the smooth muscle, like the organs, isn't impacted, but it's the muscles surrounding that support the bladder. Is that correct?
Yeah, so your bladder isn't going to suffer from it, although some women do suffer with the, as you call it, urge incontinence more at that time, really more because the vagina has struggled with atrophy. And I think as intercourse then becomes more difficult and uncomfortable, it can set off sometimes more urinary tract infections, for example, painful intercourse, and also the urge to run to the loo more frequently, which can be really helped by vaginal estrogen and pelvic floor rehabilitation. And a lot of women are just really struggling along completely unnecessarily.
Yeah. And the thing is that we know about the localized estrogen is that most women can use that regardless of their situation, because it really is localized, right? It doesn't get into their,
that's right,
their system. Yeah. And I think that women, I know women who have gone through cancer and radiation and have not been eligible to do HRT, yet they still can do the localized estrogen, and that's really helped them, because I think those women as well are a little bit of a forgotten
group. They are. Yeah. And I think, you know, that you know, that is certainly something you need to discuss with your breast surgeon, or if it's been breast cancer, or your doctor, but quite often it's absolutely fine. And I think that's just lack of knowledge by local doctors, possibly, and they don't want to put any risk for the patient, so they say, well, no, you can't use that. But I think you should take that further and absolutely check with your consultant whether or not you are able to use it, if, you know, it would benefit you.
Yeah. And so, yeah, a woman has incontinence problems. She's really embarrassed about it. She's probably not even telling her husband, because, you know, we tend to be private in that way, and she doesn't know what to do about it. What are your suggestions? I mean, clearly buy the book, because there's a ton of information in there for them to help them. But like, if a woman goes to her GP, it can be intimidating to start with. A lot of women don't want to put themselves out there in front of the doctor and admit to something like this. But who should they be talking to? Who should they be asking for a referral to? Like, have you got any guidelines for helping women in their appointment scenario with their GP?
I think, first of all, we should talk to each other. I think women need to empower each other to make this a much more normal thing to discuss. And, you know, as I said to you, there's a 2-page spread in today's Times newspaper. And so all those people who bought the Times newspaper today are reading this and thinking, oh my God, this is something. And then maybe telling their friend, did you see that piece in the Times? Because it's something that we just don't discuss. And quite often women come to me and they say, all my friends are asking, you know, find out what happens when you go to see Jane. And so if we can start talking to each other more, then you'll be more empowered when to go to your GP. I had a patient actually who went to their GP, all plucked up with their courage to say that they had this problem. And when they got there, it wasn't the normal doctor. It was a locum doctor, a sort of youngish, you know, Adonis. And she just said, I've had this terrible earache. And then she made an appointment to see me, and she said, you cannot believe what is wrong with me. I just couldn't say it to this chat. But I think possibly if you're embarrassing, go and see the female partner.
Yeah.
I think women have got to be more sympathetic to women. That is not against men. I don't think that at all. But I think, you know, women doctors who've had children will be more, you know, it's definitely more empathetic, because they understand that they've been through the process. And I think I'm hoping that in the next few years, we will have more women's health physiotherapists. Yeah. We will have more doctors who have a special interest in the subject. And actually, the more women are asking for help, the more hopefully they will get help. And as I say, my book is a good start, because it goes through the whole process. And in fact, the very first Amazon review, which is just so heartening, is a woman who said, I got your book on the Kindle, and I've read it, and I thought something was wrong with me, but I didn't really know what it was. And I now know I've got a dry vagina and a bit of a prolapse, and I'm going straight off to my doctor. So thank you very much.
Brilliant. And that's what I'm gonna say. Education is key in all of this.
That's it.
Clearly, I talk about menopause all the time, but I mean, and this is a big part of it. Mm. And I think that if a woman feels empowered, even if she just goes in with book or with, like, says, listen, I need a referral to a pelvic health physiotherapist, I need to speak to somebody about incontinence, like, actually just go in and ask for that rather than having a conversation. I feel as though I understand why women don't want to talk to male doctors, because you can't make somebody feel empowered and confident when they're utterly embarrassed and ashamed. It doesn't matter if you're telling them not to be ashamed. I get that it can be anxiety inducing. And so given if a woman goes in and at least is educated and say, I can't leave here without this referral, I need to see a specialist. That's at least getting them on the right track to seeing someone who's going to be empathetic and understand what's happening. And I mean, because what I wanted to ask you about before we start finishing up is the surgery. Like, I know a lot of women that have just said, I can't do this. I'm going for surgery. I'm just going to. And it's an option that's given to women often. Do you think it's a lot of these surgeries are unnecessary, Jane?
Surgery at the moment is a very difficult topic, particularly for stress incontinence.
Yeah.
Because there is a ban of mesh related products. So the simple procedure called a TVT, a tension free vaginal tape, at the moment is not, they're not allowed to perform it. So it's actually quite a major operation called a Colpo suspension that's required to cure stress incontinence. And I think even the surgeons are changing to, you know, if they can, if you can, for example, use a pessary, if you have a small prolapse, to allow you to be able to do your exercises or go for a run, or just, you know, one of my patients likes to stand cooking for a long time. And I think we will move away from surgery quite a lot. Well, at the moment we have had to because of this problem with mesh. So there is no quick fix for stress incontinence surgically. I mean, I do recommend people use, for example, like a large tampon in the vagina, or there are various things out there in the market for trying to apply gentle pressure to the urethra if you want to do some physical exercises. So, you know, I think absolutely we will start to move away from surgery. And as I say, the surgeons I work with, I think, are doing less and less operations. And I see a lot of patients who come to me who've been to the surgeon who say, well, I just thought he'd give me an operation and he sent me to you. So I think that's good. That has to be good news.
Has to be good news. I think what's really important as well for women, and I think a lot of women are starting to become educated, is that incontinence is something that can be prevented and cured, because the pelvic floor is actually a group of muscles. And I think that that's what a lot of women don't truly understand. And then that knowing that this is a muscular issue a lot of the time that can be helped with either the pessaries or the vaginal estrogen, but they can be strengthened. And the whole
absolutely
the pelvic floor is its skeletal muscle that has the ability to be able to actually build up again and get strong again. And so to me, even if it takes quite some time for that to happen, because strength takes a while to build, of course, there is a light at the end of the tunnel, because we're saying to you, this is muscle, and muscle integrity can be changed with exercise, right? And so
it can.
Yeah. And that's one of the things that I think should give women hope, rather than just going, I've got incontinence, I'm going to just have to wear pads. Well, no, you can change the whole conversation around it now, right?
You absolutely can. And, you know, if you think that we are going to live longer, as I said earlier, we're going to spend a third of our lives in the menopause. And, you know, grannies are running marathons. There is no reason why, if you can train to run a marathon at 75, you can't train your pelvic floor muscles to stop you leaking. And we really must, as women worldwide, you know, empower ourselves to doing just that. And that's what I've spent the last 23 years doing, beavering away quietly in my little practice. But I now hope that this really is, you know, the future for us is changed. We don't leak when we sneeze anymore. We go, no, actually, we can fix that.
Yeah.
And we get on and fix it.
And so, like moving on from that, just saying about strength work, like, you're a big proponent of, like, women getting strong, right? Like, whether that be their running or their weights or something, you want women to be strong. And so I'm going to end on a question, and you know what it is. Should women over 50 do a plank, Jen?
I think women over 50 should do exactly what they like. They should just be careful of their pelvic floor. I'm a pelvic floor expert. So for me, the pelvic floor is the most important thing. And if your pelvic floor is really, really weak, You should try to strengthen that first, and then you can go back to doing your planks as often as you like.
Yep. Yeah. Work on the problem and then build yourself back up. Of course,
I think so.
Everything's about progression and individualizing it to yourself.
I think that's it. You know, it has to be an individual thing. And, you know, if you've got a prolapse and you're doing sort of serious core work, you should just be a little bit careful and try to work your pelvic floor first and then go back to, you know, the core strength as well. Because the pelvic floor is the bottom of the core. We yep. need all four bits of it. Yeah. To work properly.
Work together. That's great. Yeah.
Well, that's right.
This was a really great conversation, Jane. I actually can't wait to get my hands on the book. I physically want the book in my hands. And so can you tell us, it's been released now, 30th of May, I believe, in the
UK. Has.
Is it available here in the US?
It's available on Amazon. So I assume so. You can buy it on Amazon. You can buy it on, if you just Google the Pelvic Floor Bible, there are lots and lots of outlets available to purchase it, both on the Kindle and the actual physical book. And the one thing that I really wanted to do with my book is make it not prohibitively expensive. So it is maximum price £9.99. And I think I was determined that it was going to be something that everyone could afford to buy. Not something that people thought, oh God, well, actually, I won't because it's too expensive. So it's a little paperback. It's not too long. So hopefully, it's easy reading. Apparently, my friends and patients who've read it say it sounds like me in there. So hopefully,
yeah, good.
You're not gonna get me coming through.
Yeah. And I think that's the problem. Like I found when I wrote my menopause book is that the books I was picking up were dry and too medical, and I didn't have the actual capacity to be able to read it because one, I have a menopause brain, and two, who's got the time for that? Just tell me what I need to know. Come on, and
that's it.
In a way I can actually understand it, right? So, Jane, where is your website as well? Could you tell us what your website is?
Yeah, so my website is www.thepelvicfloorbible.com.
.com, okay, you're not co.uk. Okay, that's good to know.
.com, yeah. I am. And Amanda's been very lovely to talk to you too.
Thank you very much for coming on the show, and keep doing what you're doing and let's keep the conversation going. Thanks very much, Jane.
Thank you, Amanda.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the show. And now I have a quick favor to ask of you. Would you leave me a review? Every time you leave me a review, it helps me get in front of new listeners. It helps me to continue to put out great content and get fabulous guests on the show. And in return for you doing that, I will send you a free gift. I have a 12-week core focus program called Abs on Fire. All you need to do is two simple things. One, leave me a review on iTunes or Google. Two, email me at amanda@fitandchips.com and I'll wing that program over to you. Thanks so much, guys. The views and advice expressed in this show by myself are not a substitute for conventional medical service. No information here should be interpreted as a medical diagnosis, treatment, or prevention of any disease. If in any doubt, always contact your healthcare provider. Thanks so much for stopping by. Take care. Bye.